You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 49, Geordi's V-Chip. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including big changes at the Nashville and Philly cons, TNG theatrical screenings and Blu-ray details, the ultimate motion picture soundtrack, an illustrated history of the Federation, new Trek jewelry, movie news, and action figures flying through space. Then in the feature, we're joined by Tristan Riddell and Michael Fisher to discuss the TNG episode, Cause and Effect. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm doing pretty good. Let's look at the time. It's about 6:30. And I've almost recovered from my night of drinking last night. You know, they say, beware of Romulans bearing gifts. You should also beware of girls who want you to buy them gin.
Okay, yes, that's true. gin.
Ah, gin. That's
my choice of drink when we were playing golf. So by the time you get to like the eighth or ninth hole.
Right.
Somehow the fact that you're hitting the ball into the water and the sand traps and all just doesn't quite
doesn't matter
bother you as right. much anymore.
Yeah. No, I noticed. it was literally 7 hours that we were drinking, and the first couple hours went by kind of slowly, and then I just started looking at my watch, and every time I looked at my watch, it was another like hour and a half. Then 3 hours had gone by. I don't know quite what happened, but anyway, I think I've recovered. I went and I watched some Star Trek to get myself in the mood, and I think I'm ready to discuss what we have on the plate today.
All right. Well, that's good. You know, I had kind of a little thing happen this morning here, too, that made me a little uncomfortable. Now, I don't know if it's made news in the States or, you know, wherever our listeners happen to be right now, but recently a penguin escaped from the zoo in Tokyo, and they've tracked the penguin down. It's actually living near the Rainbow Bridge.
Oh, now, wow.
Down in Tokyo Bay. But they haven't decided if they're going to get the penguin back yet or what they're going to do with it. But this morning, the sky became kind of dark and the sun disappeared. And I was really nervous that it was the penguin probe coming to find out what had happened to the penguins. It turned out to merely be a total eclipse of the sun.
Ah, right. I heard about that. So no penguin
goodness,
probe.
It was
then.
Not a probe. Okay. No penguin probe, thank goodness. But it was quite an event here this morning. And I've seen some beautiful shots that people have taken. It was kind of cloudy here at my place. You know, I'm a little bit southwest of the city. But I did see some really nice shots from the center of Tokyo. Beautiful corona.
Oh, wow.
Quite an eclipse. Yeah. Quite a beautiful day.
I can't remember the last time I saw a total solar eclipse. I might have been 8 or 9 the last time there was one that I could see from where I was at.
Yeah. It's from Tokyo. This was actually the first one for the past 173 years.
Wow.
And the next one like this will be about 300 years from now. So,
wow.
Quite an event.
Wow, I definitely hope that everyone who was able to get outside and see it this morning was able to. I did see some pictures. It's very nice. I was glad. It's always good when you don't have to go like on a cruise to the middle of the ocean to see an eclipse.
Yeah, definitely so. Definitely so. And even my kid's school actually started 1 hour late this morning because of the eclipse. The school's postponed the starting time. So very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, well, Greg, let's move on into news. And the first thing we have up this week is kind of related to shooting things up into the sky anyway. And this is a very interesting project that looks like something that I would have done as a kid, only these aren't kids doing this. This is the Send Picard to Space project, which turns out had a successful launch.
Right.
Have you seen the pictures of this?
I did when you sent it to me. This is something I managed to miss. This was a Kickstarter project where they were looking to raise, what was it, $2,700. in order to fund. They basically were putting, is it Picard, Riker, and Data on a model of the 1701D, and then they're putting Kirk and then Roberto Orci and J.J. Abrams on a model of the Abramsverse Enterprise. And they're actually putting them on weather balloons into space. Now, I'm saying this future tense. At this point, they've done it. There's pictures. There's video evidence. They raised, what, over $6,000 on Kickstarter to do this.
That was amazing, yeah. So they're putting, like you said, these action figures onto models of the ships. And somehow they also got an action figure of J.J. Abrams and an action figure of Roberto Orci. And there's actually a picture of these action figures with William Shatner Kirk. I believe it was Shatner Kirk. Mm-hmm. On StarTrek.com. There's a whole, they did a photo essay and sent it into StarTrek.com. And they wanted to raise $2,750 and they got $6,193 from 169 backers who wanted to help them launch action figures into the stratosphere, which is, I don't know, just very cool.
Yeah. I really don't understand where this Kickstarter came from. I'm used to, you know, product launches, you know, maybe try to get a video game made or there's that cool like watch that will tell you who's calling you on your iPhone. But this, there's not really any, there's nothing that's a business here. It's just, this would be really cool if we were able to do it. And I'm glad that they were able to have so much success. I don't know what they did with the additional $3,000 or $4,000 that they raised.
I think that they paid the Counselor Troy action figure to not go on the flight.
That's a good idea. You know, I just watched the TNG episode Disaster from the fifth season, which is so named because, of course, Troy is commanding the ship during most of the episode.
Right. That is the reason that they selected the name, right?
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, they had to pay off the Troy action figure not to go because, as it turns out, the weather balloons, they opened up and everything returned to Earth safely. But of course, if Troy had been on the mission, you know, the balloon would have failed or something and the ship would have most certainly crashed back to Earth.
Well, it's very good that Troy did not go along. But anyway, any of our listeners who have not seen this, definitely go to the website, look at this photo essay. I believe there's some video on there as well. My understanding is they were shooting it in 3D. I don't know where you can see the 3D footage, but they very well documented this. It's just one of those things that it makes you glad to be on the planet right now because there's people who not only thought of this, but actually got it to happen.
Exactly. Yeah, so just the final details, they actually spent 2 hours in the air, these action figures did. They spent 90 minutes in the stratosphere before coming back. So so go over, we'll put a link in the show notes, but if you also, if you go over to StarTrek.com and look in the news section, you'll find an item there as well with a very extensive photo essay. And as Greg said, I believe there's video there as well. And just really cool. Yeah. Very, very cool thing.
Well, Chris, you know, space isn't the only place that Patrick Stewart is going. In a recent news story, we discovered that Patrick Stewart is actually joining, Wizard World Philly?
Yes, and there's something very special about Patrick Stewart joining Wizard World Philly, Greg, and it's something that my immediate reaction when I saw the headline was, what? and why is that?
Well, this means that they have basically scooped Star Trek London for getting all five captains to appear together at a convention.
Yes.
Because they previously
had... That was
my
reaction.
They'd had four out of five, and I guess somebody told them, you know, people are really excited about this whole Star Trek London thing. And they pulled some strings and got him to come. So this is, what, it's a month or two before Star Trek London. Is going to be this event.
It's actually May 31st to June 3rd. So it's a good 4 months or so.
Oh, wow.
Star Trek London is going to be in October. So they really scooped them here. And I don't know. I was surprised. I mean, it's great for fans. And there are tons of people in America who were not going to be able to go to Star Trek London because it would just be too big of a trip, both in terms of money to travel over there right. and in terms of, you know, getting time off work and everything. So it's great for fans in the U.S. to be able to see all five captains this way as well. At the same time, my first reaction was to really feel bad for Star Trek London because they had really put together something very, very special. And it will still be special. It's still going to be a wonderful event in London. But that very unique aspect to it of having all five captains suddenly is diminished by this. So
it felt like that was what Star Trek London was really banking on. But as you say, it's a completely different audience. It's people in England versus people in the northeast of the U.S. And it's great that they're realizing that people want to see all five captains, and hopefully this will be something we're going to see more in the future.
I hope so. But there's still something Star Trek London can do to trump Wizard World Philly, and that's, of course, to get William Decker on the stage.
Yes.
You know, he's one of our favorite people on Twitter. So to you guys at Star Trek London, get on Twitter, contact William Decker. I'm pretty sure that he'll be happy to slip on his baby blue motion picture jumpsuit and fly on over there. And so you can have six captains on the stage.
I'm hoping this is going to create a sort of bidding war between the conventions. And in a couple of years, we'll have some convention that's going to have everyone who has ever been the captain of a ship called the Enterprise. Including, you know, Rachel Garrett, including Will Decker, trying to think of who else there's been. You know, we had Marina Sirtis, who was in command. Data was in command a couple times. Jonathan Frakes. Ensign Rowe, I think. They let her command the ship a time or
probably
two,
command.
Perhaps.
Now, I don't know if this counts or not, but, you know, I've always heard that sometimes, you know, they have the battle bridge. Mm-hmm. So it feels like if you're in the captain's chair on the battle bridge, you're kind of in command. And apparently Argyle used to slip in there a lot when no one was looking. Now, does that count? Can they get Argyle on the stage? And
I
guess if they get desperate, like if the bidding, once you've run through every possible person, I think at that point you have to start bringing in people like Argyle.
Right. Yes.
Of course, that's going to get you into a bidding war with Destination Star Trek Stratford-upon-Avon, as we talked about before.
Right.
But, you know, you could probably still pull him away from there.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to the future convention with all 47 captains.
Yes, absolutely. Speaking of conventions, there's been a change to the convention in Nashville, and this also involves Sir Patrick Stewart, and apparently because of commitments filming that he has going on right now, he's had to pull out of the Nashville convention, but they do have a replacement for him.
That's right. They have brought Avery Brooks's piano in to replace Pat. No, they have actual Avery Brooks, I understand.
Okay.
The
piano.
I do hope he's bringing the piano, though. You know, Patrick Stewart brings his flute. Avery Brooks brings his piano. So
I can't wait for the DVD collection that Creation is going to release of all of the conventions from 2012. So we can truly listen to the 7.1 surround sound piano and flute action with Avery and Patrick.
Indeed. So let's see. We're looking at Avery Brooks replaced him in Nashville, and the Phoenix Comic Con, Patrick Stewart will also not be appearing at. I'm not sure. What is he filming? Have we heard? He hasn't been doing that much acting recently.
Is J.J. Abrams rebooting X-Men and we don't know about it? Or
that'd be pretty good. I'd like to see that. Maybe he is filming that next-gen reboot that we were talking about a couple weeks ago.
Oh, it could be. Maybe it's just kind of like a cameo.
Yeah,
Prime
Picard
he comes
is
coming in over.
As Prime Picard, and you know he has to explain to the alternate Picard why, when alternate Riker comes on board for the first time, he has to make him manually dock the saucer section. You know, it's a very important thing, buddy.
And then he has to convince alternate Picard, who happens to love Darjeeling, that Earl Grey is a much better choice of drink. You see, they did that little thing there.
Right.
You see what they did there? They changed the Earl Grey to Darjeeling, so it's different than the alternate timeline.
Right, indeed.
All right.
So if you were planning on going to a convention, you might want to check the lineup at this point and make sure that everyone you wanted to see is actually going to be there. I mean, this always happens, right? You can never be 100% sure that your favorite person is going to be there, unless it's LeVar Burton, because as Dorchek has told us, LeVar Burton is the most wonderful person of all time. And if he says he'll be there, don't worry. Don't worry. He'll be there.
He will be. They are indeed in love with LeVar Burton. But he's a great guy. I mean, one of my favorite people of all the Star Trek actors is LeVar Burton. Absolutely.
It's pretty fantastic.
All right. Well, while we're talking about Next Generation here, Greg, this news has been out for about a week or so. We didn't get to talk about it yet. There has been both a confirmed release date for the Next Generation Season 1 Blu-ray in the U.S. I think when we talked about it in the past, we were going off of a European release date.
Right.
So July 24th. The set will be out in the U.S., and they have confirmed the bonus features as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good bonus features. They're including the original episode promos, which are always fun to go back and watch those. They've got a couple new, like, featurette documentaries, some different unreleased footage. And one thing that's making me really happy is that they're including all of the extras from the DVDs as well. So I don't know if they've... I don't think they've upgraded those to Blu-ray or anything, but at least if you're someone like me who didn't shell out the bucks for the DVDs when they came out, or, you know, if you just don't want to have to keep them around, your Blu-ray is going to be the definitive next-gen experience for you now.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I don't know if any of that stuff was shot in a... A lot of that stuff was shot right around the time when the transition to HD was going on, so it's possible maybe that some of it was shot in HD and they have it. I don't know. It'd be nice if they did, but just the fact that it's on there is great. Yeah, so you have everything in one place is indeed going to be wonderful. Now, these new features, of course, they have some never before released DVD archival launch footage, which is interesting. They always have unreleased footage, right? It's going to be like 200 years from now, the latest format. Next Generation is going to come out. We're going to have unreleased footage again.
Right.
But I do understand that the season one set has some 7.1 surround sound flower bed destroying action in it. I'm looking forward to finding out, you know, just what else is in that flower bed when Wesley jumps in.
Yeah, I don't know. They're also including the original, you know, stereo surround audio. I wonder if it's going to be like, you know, going back to the Beatles and, you know, sometimes you want to listen to the new stereo mixes and sometimes you want to just hear that original mono for that, you know, classic Beatles sound. So it's nice that they're giving us the option. I don't know. I can't really see myself ever really building a 7.1 surround sound, you know, entertainment system. But my brother has one. So I'm hoping when I go back to see him, he's got a... It's like a 110-inch projection screen, and then surrounded with the surround sound. So that would definitely be the second best place to watch the next-gen Blu-ray. Of course, the best place is something that we actually talked about a few weeks ago. We were wondering, will they do theatrical screenings of next-gen episodes like they did with the original series?
Right, and they are going to do them. They've announced they're going to do them in about 600 theaters all across the U.S., and they are doing them actually on the 23rd, right? The day before the release of the DVDs, Monday, July 23rd, and they have picked two episodes, and these are Where No One Has Gone Before and Data Lore. What do you think about these selections, Greg?
Yeah, because Data Lore, I was just really... excited to see that, you know, with the 7.1 surround sound beam a tree into space action. it's not my favorite episode. I think they might have picked that one because of the new computer generated crystalline entity that they've worked on.
Yeah.
So they want to show off that, and they think that that's going to be one of the big effects episodes. And of course, Where No Man Has Gone Before, or Where No One Has Gone Before, I should say. Is one I really would like to see. That would be fantastic to see on the big screen. Because those effects, I've only seen fuzzy. I'm sure there's amazing looking stuff in there that I haven't been able to notice before.
Yeah, that is true. When you point out the visuals, I think these probably are two very good selections for that purpose.
Yeah.
When I just think about the stories, you know, I think, well, there are some other stories in season one that I would rather see if I were going to a theater to see the story. Mm. But yes, this is about the HD image. And I, boy, that crystalline entity that they've done. Again, I'm not a big fan of touching material from the past and like redoing it. However, in the case of this crystalline entity, I think they had to do it because that effect was not going to hold up in HD. And what they created is just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. It looks fantastic. And it's actually, I just watched Silicon Avatar, which I believe is also from the fifth season, which is sort of the return of the crystalline entity. And oh my God, they use like the same shot, which I think is from Datalore. And they use it about 8 times in that episode. So I'm really looking forward to them getting to that point and using this new computer generated model and create some, you know, really nice scenes or really nice shots with it. There's no reason to let themselves be held back when it's a case like this where the original effect was already done on video in standard def. Just go ahead and create a new one. I appreciate that they're using the original filmed elements where possible, but this is a case where definitely just go ahead, create a new one. It's gonna look a lot better.
Yeah, definitely so. So I wish that I were in the U.S. and I could see these screenings. I think I would indeed go to them if I had the opportunity. So I hope maybe you get a chance to go, Greg, and you can tell me what they're like.
I'll definitely be there. I hope they show more than just these two. We'll have to see when it gets a little bit closer. But I will definitely be there for at least this Monday screening of these two episodes. And I'll report back, of course.
All right, good. Looking forward to that. Okay, well, Greg, as we talk about releasing and re-releasing Star Trek material, we've talked throughout this year, actually, something about 2012, and maybe it even ran into the end of last year. It is the season of soundtrack re-releases and remasterings, and we have another one coming up here, and this one looks like the most elaborate one that they have done yet.
Yeah, they're doing the original, or they're doing the motion picture. And it's a 3-CD set of all of the music, which, again, I don't know why they don't just do this when they initially release a CD set.
It's called marketing, Greg.
Right. But I do remember when I listened to the motion picture soundtrack, it's missing a lot of stuff. It's kind of depressing how limited it is, especially since a lot of the times the stuff you really remember from the film is not the stuff they put in the CD. For some reason, they'll put the big orchestral stuff, but like the exciting like fight music, it all gets chopped up and doesn't end up being like what you remembered and wanted to hear again. So this will be interesting that they've done a full remastering and they've put pretty much every bit of music possible into the set, and they've given it a really nice deluxe packaging too. We're talking about that before the show.
Yeah, the packaging is amazing. I want to buy it. You know, I don't buy audio on CD anymore these days, but this is one where I'd like to buy it just to put it on my desk, basically, look at. I mean, I've always loved the poster artwork from the motion picture with the rainbow beam. It just looks fantastic. So what they've done here, they have scoring engineer Bruce Botnick has taken the original analog sound rolls. These were 16-track, 2-inch sound rolls. And there are 37 of these rolls that made up the soundtrack for the motion picture. Mm. And they took these and they baked them for 8 hours in a 110-degree convection oven to prepare them to transfer them to a digital format. So they've put a lot of effort into this to convert this to digital and then get this 3-CD set out there for you. And besides the beautiful packaging, it also comes with the 40-page full-color booklet as well.
Yeah, it looks very nice. And each of the CDs, of course, has one from that famous triumvirate of Star Trek, you know, Shatner, Nimoy, Ilia.
Yes, the famous triumvirate, yes. Yep, you got to get that Ilia in there.
I want to make sure.
I really thought that you were going to go with Glamour, but Yeah.
Well, we have to wait.
A glamour than Ilea.
I'm waiting on the animated series deluxe 16 CD original score set that will have, you right. know, the glamour overture that was sadly left out of the original animated series soundtrack.
Yeah. It's coming. I'm pretty sure by September,
right?
We will be reporting on this story on the Ready Room.
At this rate, I mean, we've had Star Trek 5, we've had Star Trek 6, Star Trek 4. Might have talked about Wrath of Khan as well, and then Motion Picture.
I don't remember if they had Wrath of Khan yet or
not.
But they do seem to be running through all of them. So yeah. Before long, I think we'll have them all. And especially the four-disc remastering of the Nemesis soundtrack, which I know fans were clamoring for.
Well, the thing I really like about the Nemesis soundtrack is how the cello is digitally pitched lower to sound more alien.
That's right. The Romulan cello. All right. So if you're interested in this, you can go over... if you go over to treknews.net, I know they have a very good story, mm-hmm. a lot of artwork on there. And you'll find that this is limited to 10,000 units. Mm-hmm. So if you are interested in it, I would recommend that you hop over and order it. It's coming out from La La Land Records. It's actually La La Land Records, Sony Music, and Paramount Pictures have joined forces for this. So go over and check that out and get your hands on one.
Yeah, very cool.
Okay, Greg, we have another really cool item that you came across here.
Yeah, and this actually comes from something Brian Finifter was talking about, I believe, a few weeks ago when we had him on the show, and he was talking about the early days of the Federation. And I remember somebody tweeted us that they are looking forward to when Brian finally writes that history of the Federation.
And, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and well, here it is. It's apparently been in the works. It's called Star Trek Federation, the First 150 Years.
So you're saying that Brian finally got his book published, is that what you're saying?
Right. No, that would be quite a thing. I believe it does have an actual author. I neglected to put down who the author is, but he's gone through and basically put in every bit of information they could find from Enterprise, from when they've talked about it on the various series. There's a lot of like illustrations and stuff like that, finally in like one package. And this looks to be a really, really interesting book, and I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on it.
Yeah, it does. It does indeed have an author. The author is David A. Goodman.
Yes, that's right.
And so he's put this together, and it is a, I believe, 176-page book mm-hmm. That also has electronic features like lights. And it has audio narration provided by none other than George Takei.
Right. Yeah. It's got this crazy pedestal that you can put the book on for displaying. And somehow that pedestal includes this narration. I hope there's a button you can push and it'll go, you know, oh my.
Yeah. When you read a story and it gives you the outline and you're like, in 2237... the president of the Federation declared da 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 da, and then you press the button. Oh my!
Right. Yeah, there'll just be a little.
Just makes the whole reading experience so much more fun, doesn't it?
It's a little Takei icon. It just comes up every time you're supposed to push the button.
Over in the scholar's margin, there's like a little picture, drawing of Takei.
Exactly.
Push button now.
But this will be great. It's coming out, I believe, in November, so it's going to be. If you're a Star Trek fan, you should start putting this on your Christmas list. If you're someone like me who mainly buys this sort of thing for yourself, go ahead and figure out where you can pre-order it, because it will be out this fall.
Yep, and it's selling for $99.
Yeah.
And Greg, now, will you buy this for yourself, wrap it, and then put it under the tree, and then unwrap it and act surprised?
How did you know that that's been my last like five Christmases? Oh wow, it's another Blu-ray copy of Star Trek. Thank you, myself.
I already had this.
I guess I'll have to give this to someone else.
All right. Okay, so let's see. We have another little quick item here, a merchandise item. Greg, you know, we have our friends in Alberta, Canada, the city of Vulcan, Vulcan Tourism. Right. Catherine Pooley is up there. She runs all that. And they've just released another item for those who like to show off their love for Star Trek in jewelry. And these are Trek insignia bracelets.
Yeah, they're nice little bracelets. These are not symbols that I'm entirely up on. But it's like the command insignia, like engineering. They've got like the science, Starfleet science. So basically whatever sort of various symbol you want to show off, they've got a bracelet or a keychain or a hat. They've got all of these different accessories that they're selling now. You don't have to go to Vulcan to get them, right? You can buy them right on the website.
That's right. You don't have to go to Vulcan to get them, although we do encourage you to go to Vulcan. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for an interesting place to take a vacation, if you go up to Vulcan, Alberta, there's the whole Science Center, Star Trek exhibits and everything there. It's very cool. But if you can't make it there, you can order them from their website. The bracelets are selling for $55, and they are designed by Jennifer Bunt of Magic Dog Studios. Hmm. And they're actually handmade, which is very cool, handmade bracelets.
Yeah.
And they're made from 100% recycled silver, sterling silver. So very cool. They do have the insignias from the original series inside the Delta Shield. You know, they had the departmental insignias, which we don't have in the later series. So they have those there. So very cool. So if you're interested in these, you can go take a look. Go over to store.vulcantourism.com and you can see them there. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. So nice. Another great gift idea.
Yeah. And if you can swing this as like a Valentine's Day gift for your wife or girlfriend, I definitely salute you. I Vulcan salute you because that'll be, I would love to have someone who would appreciate getting one of these as a Valentine's gift.
Yes. What, you didn't get me chocolates? What did you get me? Oh my God, you got me a Star Trek bracelet with a science insignia? Yes, if your girlfriend appreciates that, then you are indeed lucky.
Good job.
I would say. All right, so one more quick item here, Greg, about Leonard Nimoy as we were talking about the motion picture. The follow-up to that, of course, The Wrath of Khan is what really set into motion you know, what we think of in terms how Star Trek grew and I think led to the Next Generation and everything. And there's a special showing of Star Trek II coming up at the LA Film Festival later this year.
Yeah, on June 16th, because I suppose it's the, 30th anniversary of The Wrath of Khan's release.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't realize we'd gotten, 30 years since Wrath of Khan.
I know, it's hard to believe, that much time has gone by.
Yeah, so what's basically the news that's come out is that Leonard Nimoy is going to be on hand to present the film. Now he didn't direct Wrath of Khan, but of course he was very much involved in the making of the film, and especially the climax of the film is very much focused on Leonard Nimoy and Spock and all that. And he's probably, of all the people you could get to come to introduce it, he's definitely the one I would want to see.
Yes, it'll be a great moment. So if you're looking for that one, I know treknews.net has a hop-over link up right now. If you're listening to this, you can run over there. And that's going to be at the Fig at 7th Theater in downtown Los Angeles at 8:30 p.m. on Saturday, June 16th. It is free admission, but they do have limited seating, of course, because it's a theater. Yeah. So you want to get over and make sure that you hold down your spot for that.
And that'd be scary because I went to the Wrath of Khan screening where the tickets were, you know, $8 or $10. And they were very much sold out well in advance of the screening. And it was full to capacity. So if you want to get into this, I would definitely figure out how to get a ticket earliest or, you know, go camp out. Because it's going to be, I mean, with Nimoy there as well, this is going to be one of the hottest things that you'd have to try to get into.
Definitely. I mean, you saw what happened at his final convention.
Right.
How many people are trying to get into that. So they also say there's a special treat for anyone who comes in character. So
nice.
Go ahead, either put on your uniform, or Greg, you can go as yourself, but you can pull your Empress Hoshi figure along with you as your date, I guess. And that will count as coming in costume, and you can get your special treat.
My Empress Hoshi has become quite enamored with me since I showed off my fake Ricardo Montalban chest.
I bet.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I've gotta go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you'd drop
so
in.
So very nice.
I'll hold your hands there just like
my
ice.
Mother will start to work.
All right. So Greg, apparently it's going to be a little bit cold in the next Star Trek movie, perhaps. I'm not sure. As we move into our one and only movie news and rumor story this week. Mm-hmm. And this is about the Star Trek sequel second unit shooting in Iceland.
Yeah, which I don't know if you've seen Iceland recently. It's actually beautiful. Iceland sort of makes me think that it's going to be, you know, Hoth that they're going to be visiting. But no, Iceland actually looks more like New Zealand. It's very green and beautiful. So I really have no idea where this could be. I'm assuming it's not just some sort of typical Earth location. I think if I read this correctly, the newspaper that we get the news from in Iceland said that this could perhaps be Vulcan, but they may be a little mistaken about their continuity.
Maybe it's New Vulcan.
Right, that could be. There we go. New Vulcan is very green and there's lakes everywhere.
Maybe so. I think there is a lot of diversity in the terrain. Yeah, as you said, in Iceland, everything from areas that look like New Zealand and all lush and green to areas that look more like a desert, you know, rocky desert area as well. Very rusty looking areas.
Right.
I think that's why the Icelandic paper was speculating that it might be Vulcan. But yeah, we really don't know what type of terrain or visual we might be getting from Iceland. But I'm guessing it probably is some sort of alien planet.
Yeah, and we've already seen those red trees of some sort. It would not
surprise me. Oh, the ones from Home Depot.
Right.
Yes.
So it wouldn't surprise me to see those show up in Iceland magically. Now, this is only second unit, right? So they're, my understanding
it's
is that means
unit.
They won't be like bringing the cast there. They're just shooting extra shots, like establishing shots, exteriors, stuff for the visual effects. So this isn't, as we've talked, the principal photography is wrapped. This is them picking up extra things that they need to complete the film.
Right. So I don't know if this gives me any clue as to what's really going on, but who knows? I mean, maybe this is SETI Alpha 5 and
there you go.
They're going to drop it in, you know, shot in front of a blue screen and drop in the background. typically, I would think J.J. Abrams would not do that. But then again, this is actually the first time that a Star Trek film has shot on location for anything outside of the United States.
Oh, wow. And I did not realize that.
Yeah, the Star Trek VI, they did go to Alaska, if you remember those shots of Rurapinthe.
Right.
They kind of pulled back. But that wasn't actually Shatner
or
DeForest Kelly out there on the ice. It was just, again, like second unit stuff. So,
yeah.
But of course, lest we not forget, Alaska is part of the United States.
And,
you know, here in Japan, people tend to forget that Hawaii is part of the United States.
Right, that's an easy thing to forget.
You ask people, have you ever been to America before? No. Have you been to Hawaii? Yeah, I've been to Hawaii. Part of the United States.
That was America, guys. Right, but this is the first time they're actually going outside of the States. That's interesting. Yeah.
So because of the expense involved in like sending, you know, the actual cast over to shoot,
right,
maybe if it's something that's going to be fairly limited, perhaps they might shoot the backgrounds and do some compositing with blue screens. Possible.
Yeah.
So don't quite know what it is, but, even if they're doing that, I am glad that they're actually shooting some real footage and not just making everything completely CGI like Mr. Lucas would do.
Yes, indeed.
Ah!
In preparing for this week's episode, I got the feeling that I was experiencing Nipah, the feeling that I had seen this episode before. In fact, I had seen this episode before, and it's called Cause and Effect. And this week we're going to talk about the very interesting fifth season episode in which the Enterprise gets caught in a temporal causality loop. And to help us talk about that, of course, Greg is here, and joining us is host of Hyperchannel, Tristan Riddell. Hello, Tristan.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great. And also, we have back with us, friend of the show, Michael Fisher. Hey, Michael.
Gentlemen, wonderful to be back, as always.
The disembodied voice of Michael. Michael's camera is not working today, so we are just hearing him.
You are bereft of my visage.
From somewhere out in the ether.
Yes. From somewhere in the corner of Dr. Crusher's bedroom.
Oh, okay. So now we know the voices that Dr. Crusher was hearing are Michael. The voices of Michael from every time loop over in the corner, hidden in the shadows.
And for some reason, he was whispering all creepily, like, I don't know why.
Right.
I know.
Five conversations of which were of a romantic nature.
Right.
I wanted to know what those conversations were. I wanted to know if, like, they were breaking up. Or if they were romantical in nature, as in like in the holodeck.
Well, didn't he say during romantic encounters? I think it was. Yeah.
Yes, romantic encounters.
Like that,
yes,
yeah. Romantic encounters.
I do believe that is going to be one of the bonus features on the season 5 Blu-ray set. Finally,
right.
The unreleased conversations,
right,
from the romantic encounters.
I have the sense that we've been in bed together before, and it was so good that it felt like the ship exploded around us.
Yes.
At least we know we know that those after images that Geordi was seeing, those were not romantic encounters that Geordi had in the previous time.
No, certainly not.
Most definitely not.
Illegal visor channels. Right, well,
don't worry, they're all scrambled.
Yeah.
Do you think he has
to try to
unscramble
them?
Yeah,
the V-chip in his...
Like, Geordi's V-chip. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, man.
Are we already,
well, anyway,
already off the rails? Yeah.
We're 2 minutes and 53 seconds into this feature, and we're already off the rails. But
awesome.
This is about the time where the show blows up. And
right. All hands abandon the podcast.
Right.
But this was a very interesting episode. It's actually one of my favorite TNG episodes.
Me too.
Very interesting concept. It's one that, you know, I've heard before. I don't remember if I read it or I remember it from when I went to a convention a long time ago and Frakes was there talking about when they got the script for this, that they almost thought it was a joke at first because the script was so thin. And it's like, we have to do this scene over and over and over. But it turned out to be one of the most unique concepts, especially of a kind of a time travel story without all the usual cliches of a time travel story.
Well, one thing that's great about it is even though they're doing the same scene, they're showing the same scene over and over again, Frakes did a really good job of not just reusing the same shots. You know, I imagine there was a line producer sitting there saying, you know, John, we could save like $500,000 if you would just shoot the scene once and just show the footage again. But maybe he was scared, memories of Shades of Grey coming back to him and didn't want it to be a clip show for sure. Is something they mentioned on Memory Alpha.
Yeah, but I actually read Rick Berman said, look, let's make sure it doesn't look like a clip show.
Right.
Yeah.
Because people will just hit the remote and turn it off or go to a news channel.
Right. They'll be like, wait, I didn't know Pulaski was in season 5.
Exactly.
Why is she making everyone on the ship relive the same moment?
Right. So they do an amazing thing where they like never reuse a shot. It's always going to a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about late in the episode, it gets to the point where I think Frakes kind of ran out of places to put the camera. It's like, well, what if we stick it in the ceiling?
Which is the best.
Weird what if we just
ever.
Put the
I
camera behind
that.
My... Right.
You see that a lot. Like, not only do they change shots, but they change filming technique. I mean, anyone who knows anything about who's done cinematography or has been around a set, you know, they change from track to Steadicam to even handheld.
The handheld stuff on Dr. Crusher when she's trimming her plants, and it's just getting increasingly more disturbing. Yeah. Oh, that's amazing when they first switched to handheld. It's a very, very effective technique, yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember seeing that too much in the 90s.
Yeah, the ceiling cam thing does look pretty odd, but I am glad that they went with that rather than their original choice, which was the Patrick Stewart leg cam, where they were going to put the camera between his legs, shooting up. It was going to be just kind of an uncomfortable angle. And I didn't really want to see
Worf's toenails. You know, I just didn't think that was a good idea.
Well, there was the one poker scene where it's all done from like behind Frakes' head.
Mm-hmm.
And which I really liked. It's like, just stick the camera behind the director and just make it happen.
Yeah, and I think it's only the second poker game we see where we first have those kind of extreme close-ups on Riker and Crusher. It was like, you're going to call my bluff, aren't you? Yeah, it was jarring, and I felt it was effectively so, though, right? It didn't pull me out of the episode.
Very
like,
much
suddenly
so.
I was like, wow, the camera's right in the face here. Yeah. And because of the lighting, it almost looked like there was maybe a little vignetting as well, which made it doubly weird. It was very, very, very unsettling. Yeah.
What was strange for me in that scene was that I have seen this episode literally probably 100 times because it's one of my favorite episodes I watch over and over. But I tend to watch, you know, on my computer in a little window or so and forth. And last night I was watching it on my big TV in the living room. And in that case, for the first time, I really felt that those close-ups were jarring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, watching that scene, especially with the close-ups, I felt like I was watching a Jonathan Demme film. Where all of a sudden we get closer and closer, and then you're straight on to where they're almost staring directly at the camera,
in the frame.
And you're as engaged as possible. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I feel like this is the first episode where you really feel like Frakes is a bona fide director. Mm-hmm. He's not just going through. You know, he's not just doing the thing where they're having the cast do some of the episodes because it'll save a little bit of money because he's there anyway. He's actually making it work. Like what was an episode in season 4 he did, the Drumhead, where it's a very standard episode and it's like, you know, what's he doing? But here I feel like he came to the script and said, wow, this is actually a really good script. I'm gonna really make like feature quality out of this.
Well, and the Drumhead is a different type of episode too, right? It's less sci-fi, and that's definitely heavier on the Star Trek, you know, social commentary side of Star Trek, rather. Whereas, you know, here, I think he really, I think his hand was forced into finding new and creative ways to do that, like those long dolly shots and the wacky ceiling shots that we don't see again until All Good Things and stuff,
Right.
Yeah, I thought it was a very good episode for Frakes, and I love Frakes as a director because he started strong with Drumhead and Offspring and Reunion and then Cause Effect. And sadly, when you look at his TNG directing career, he ended it with Sub Rosa, which was not a good Beverly Crusher episode, but thankfully this one was.
This script definitely lended itself to telling a story visually because the script itself was so thin that it allowed him as a director to really tell the story. Because like you said, with Drumhead, with like the courtroom scenes and all, it was very standard.
Which actually, I believe the Drumhead was originally going to be a clip show, and they decided, well, let's make it a pseudo clip show and just try to save money. Whereas this, as I said, it's really trying to push the medium forward. And let's talk about that script a little bit. I mean, this is Brandon Braga coming back, who they always go to for doing these weird sort of episodes. What was it, Chris, that Larry said they talked about Brandon on the show?
Oh, Brandon became known as the weird shit guy.
Yeah.
Right, that's right.
And there's a lot of callbacks to, or not callbacks to, or, you know, presaging of, what was it, Schisms? That you were talking about earlier. Yeah, I mean, so much of the feel of this episode is so much like that. And it's, you know, a lot of that is in the script, but I feel like, you know, the production team would get a hold of the scripts and you know, the music guys. Who did the music on this one? I forget his name. Is this Jay Chataway or?
It's Jay Chataway, I believe, is who's been doing it for most of season 5.
It's just incredible how much the music does for this episode. When it's still the kind of acoustic wallpaper of TNG, but it's just so unsettling, especially in concert with some of those more disturbing camera angles like the handheld and that kind of stuff. I mean, it all works in concert to make it feel like it could be none other than a Brandon Braga episode to me, which is interesting.
Yeah. Well, and the script plays out as a sort of like a puzzle that has to be put together. Mm-hmm. It kept reminding me of Memento, which is that script that Chris and Jonathan Nolan spent, you know, years piecing it together so that it made sure they made sense from beginning to end. This really felt like that sort of thing.
When I found out that Brandon Braga wrote this, I was very surprised, because it's not that I don't like Brandon Braga, but I'm very aware of his reputation to be the weird shit guy, but also just throw nothing but technical vernacular at you and thinks that it's plot devices.
Right.
Because when you look at Voyager, you see all the scientific jargon just thrown at you. But then when you watch this episode, very little of it is...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's really only one scene that's full of it. And
yeah, the Geordi PowerPoint table. Hour.
yeah, exactly. And you were able to enjoy it for what it was just a crazy situation that was happening. And then they filled in a little science just to kind of get by. And I really appreciated that and was surprised to see that Braga was actually responsible for it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that leapt into my mind as well when they first ran into the distortion, which I actually do want to talk about a little bit when we get to it. But like the ship systems fail very, very quickly, but we don't get explanations for it because the pacing of the scene does not allow for it, which I really liked. And they just kept the pace up by saying, you know, no, thrusters are broken. This isn't responding. Everything has gone to shit. And that's it, you know, that's all we get. We don't get the Voyager-esque, that would have been a 90-second explanation scene from Harry Kim if this were Voyager,
Oh, we'd have been totally
We'll like, believe you, you know, we'll believe you no matter what. Right. Just tell us something's wrong and we're like, oh, no, what are they going to do?
Well, this is something that Next Gen has gotten a lot better at, you know, especially since the first and second seasons. I was also watching Disaster today, and it's just something happens to the ship and it's disabled, and... Okay, there's some techno babble here and there as far as they have to go and fix things, but I never felt like we got this long explanation. Oh, well, there's this happened and this, and there's even, I think it's a joke where Troy says, well, is it kind of like this other thing? And they just say, no, it's not. It's like, and they just move on.
It's like too much air in a balloon.
I remember that.
So they're being so much better with the techno babble, and it kind of is really sad that they went back to it so much in Voyager.
Because it snowballed into Voyager, where it just became ridiculous in Voyager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we've talked about this before several times, at least whenever I've been on, but just the difference between Ronald D. Moore and Brandon Braga. Like, together, they can do TNG. Separated, they have something dark and then something pseudoscientific.
Yeah.
And before we get too far away from that, I do want to point out that, this episode is one of the first ones where we see some of the major flaws inherent in the Galaxy class design. They roll up to the neighborhood of this anomaly. Like, they're not even in it. They're just kind of around it. Yeah. They lay eyes on it. And what goes down are thrusters, all main systems, power, the shields, and the helm. And then they run into another ship. And the
core containment.
Well, no, that's after the collision. After the collision, they lose inertial dampers, which knocks Mr. Rikerbeard over, and then the ejection system. Yeah, the most crucial function of the ship. Exactly, right. Well, I would never want
to. Mr. Rikerbeard, he wasn't choosing the most suitable way to stand when your ship is entirely going to be thrown around.
That is what is awesome. That is what is awesome about William T. Okay, because no matter what situation's going on, I don't care if the Borg are attacking, if there's some sort of spatial disturbance, or if Worf ripped a new one in the space-time continuum, he's going to put his swagger lean on the console.
Very true.
And he's going to look good going down.
That is a very.
He's
going to
look good. Even though he walked in there, he thought it's a routine thing. He put his leg up there. What he didn't know that he was about to do the biggest barrel roll ever.
Do a barrel roll. The barrel roll. Prestige or
And he did it with style.
And panache and flair. Agreed.
He did. But so then, so all the systems go down, and then the ship spins out of control, and then it just explodes. In preparing for this week's episode, I started getting the feeling that I was having nipah, the feeling that I had seen this episode before. And in fact, I had. I've seen this episode many times. And wait, have we had this conversation before?
Yeah, last Tuesday night.
No, that's not what I mean.
Go ahead and continue the podcast, Chris. I think I'm going to get a queen. Michael's going to get a three.
Wait. Chris, are you about to introduce me? How did I know you were going to introduce me?
How did we know?
Both of us?
Oh, I think we've done this before, guys.
Yeah, last Tuesday night.
Yeah. You know, it's a good thing that you were able to harness the power of the Decheon, Chris.
Yes. And what did you call this, Michael? You called this the Star Trek Groundhog Day, right?
Yes, which is, I know where you're going. This is amazingly cool.
It's too bad they don't play Jeopardy every Tuesday night in Riker's Quarters.
Right. Well, it's fascinating to me that this episode predates Groundhog Day, right? Because it did in the U.S. The release date is actually before, because Groundhog Day is 92, this is 91, am I correct?
No, this was 92.
Early
92. This is 92. This is March of 92. Yeah.
So then, wait, was Groundhog Day 93? Because I know there's a year gap, and Next Gen is favored here. That's what
maybe.
I
Groundhog Day came out in 93.
Yeah. Okay. And this came out in 92. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that Groundhog Day ripped off Star Trek, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I think that is about as clear as I can be. Yeah.
Michael is saying that Bill Murray owes his career to Jonathan Frakes, I think is what he said.
Yeah, essentially.
Well, that's generally what I always say, no matter what we're talking about, but yes.
Oh, all right. So back to the technobabble thing here just for a second, though, as I was watching this episode, but I mean, it's a wonderful point, because what I was thinking when I was watching this episode is that this is a really good example of what I love about the Next Generation, is that they're really just telling a story, and it's not too technical, and it's very talky. There are a lot of like long drawn out scenes in here, very quiet moments, but you do know it's like leading you somewhere, and this felt very, very Next Generation for me.
Yeah.
And it's a bottle show on top of that. So everything about it is inside the D and inside the sets that we know and love. And so we can focus on the characters and not introduce new locations or new characters and just kind of go with it.
Mm-hmm. I think, actually, Next Gen is the show that can do bottle shows the best, because there's the cast, there's so much diversity of types of characters they have in the cast. There's such a huge ship around them to go to stories in. They've got the holodeck. I just feel like you could do a whole season of bottle shows with Next Gen, and I really wouldn't complain, that's not true of say, Voyager, for sure. Even the original series, you really want to get off the ship. But Next Gen, I didn't even notice this was a bottle show. But no, of course, you're right. They never leave the D except for that one shot of Frasier on the USS Seattle.
Greetings, Enterprise D. This is WKACL 780.
Helding frequencies are open.
I'm listening.
I was going to say, I was like, no one's going to say it. I was waiting for somebody
else to say
it.
I said it before. I think I said it on the other side of the room.
I think
you
did.
Yeah, but we're not recording, man.
I know. We should start doing that.
You made a great point, Greg, when we were talking the other day, that it's too bad that in First Contact, the episode First Contact, that they didn't bring Space Lilith back to the Enterprise so that she can meet Space Frasier later on.
It really, I mean, they're so close. That episode was, what, end of fourth season? This is end of fifth season. Space Lilith and Space Frasier could have had quite a space hookup.
A spa hookup.
Captain Crane almost had a much more interesting first officer, isn't that right?
That is true. They were trying to get Kirstie Alley to come back, but there were... What was the euphemism that Memory Alpha uses for the fact that she won too much money?
Scheduling conflicts, I believe.
Oh, yeah, scheduling. Yes. Scheduling conflicts.
Couldn't be worked out because of scheduling issues.
She does have quite a lot of scheduling conflicts, doesn't she?
She had to sit at home and be mad that they weren't going to pay her enough money.
Right. Now, I had heard...
and that was going to take all weekend.
I had heard that there had been similar issues trying to bring her back on, you know, of course, Star Trek 3 and 4, but I had read another account on that said that she was demanding so much money specifically to put up with William Shatner again, which I found...
that is very possible.
Yeah, which I found completely believable, but who knows, really?
Well, maybe that's the same thing here. She wanted a lot of money to put up with Kelsey Grammer again after all those years on Cheers.
It could well be.
Isn't it weird to think, though, that this came out... is it the same year or is the year after... was it... Well, now I'm going to get it confused. But we're still doing original series Star Trek movies. It was, I believe, Star Trek VI came out the year before this.
It was 91, yeah.
Star Trek VI was 91. Came out 91, so yeah. And around December, right? Middle of December. Yeah. So, right. Yeah, it was only like three months before this, yeah.
Right. So they have this, the actual ship they used for the Bozeman was the actual Reliant model they used in Star Trek II. And of course, they just used the set from the films to put Kelsey Grammer on there. It's kind of crazy that they could just go a couple sound stages over and be right where original series stuff is going on. You know, because now you look at it and it's like, oh, well, that was completely separate. But this, man, this was a crazy time. End of the 90s or beginning of the 90s.
Well, this was really the start of a crazy time. And then it got even more crazy with DS9 starting, Voyager starting. Mm-hmm. So this is always, this is the early days of the golden age of Star Trek, for sure.
Exactly.
I was just about to say that. Yeah, I've always referred to it as the golden age.
Yeah.
Because it truly was. I mean, if you think about how much Trek they threw at us, and it's just, I'm getting all weepy thinking about it now.
Yeah, me too. I'm getting quite nostalgic for aisles but it's of what? Merchandise in every Walmart as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Yep. Well, while we're talking about hookups here, I did want to hit on a point that Tristan, you mentioned in the other side of the room, and this is about the 24th century booty call. Because as we know from listening to Dork Trek, you know, I've been watching Next Generation since it premiered, and I never really realized until just over the past year as I listened to Dork Trek how much sex takes place on the Enterprise D. Yeah. I mean, my goodness. We always thought it was just Riker, but man, there's a lot of action happening on that ship.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, Chris, because
I didn't ask you to bring this up or anything beforehand. But when I was watching this, I was watching it with my wife, and she said, you know, like, hey, you know, what are you going to talk about tonight on the podcast? And I said, 24th century booty call is what I'm going to talk about. And the reason being, okay, so here's the thing. Like, one thing, we'll just get it out in the open. Of course, Riker has swagger. We all know that. And we talked about it. And if you notice, every single time they show Riker and Troy come into the conference room, they always come in together, okay?
Oh, really?
They didn't try, they didn't try to do the, okay, you wait 5 minutes, I'll walk in, and then, you know, wait a couple minutes, and then I'll walk in. You know, they didn't do any of that. They had no shame, and every single time they walked in at the same time. And I really think that he was adjusting his uniform.
Wow.
Like, you know, just watch the tape and push pause.
I did not catch
on
to that.
You got to watch closely.
Do you think that they were one of the five?
They might have been. I did not realize until this watch through of TNG how much sex there really is on the show that you don't even have to just add to it. I just watched an episode that I think I had actually repressed called The Host. Do you know what happens in The Host?
Yeah. Beverly Crusher totally makes it with Riker's body.
Yes. With Riker's body. Riker, I can't believe there's like, there is no part of me that believes that they actually put that in a script, filmed it, and aired it on national television.
It happened. It happened between the shiny sheets, and we all know it.
The space blanket.
Do you think she ever told him? Do you think that, like, you know, he asked her, you know.
Wasn't his consciousness?
Well, he was aware.
Like, yeah, didn't he have
no, he knew
awareness
it.
That whole time?
Yeah, he just had to sit back and let it happen.
Right.
Yeah.
He knew it, and he couldn't move his arms, but mentally he was putting a little check. Okay, Crusher.
Then there's a scene.
The phaser mark.
I didn't think I was going to be able to check that one off, but I did.
There's a scene where Troy gives her permission to do it. And that almost makes it more disturbing, because Crusher's like, I'm not really sure. And Troy's like, you know what? It's your boyfriend right now is inhabiting my boyfriend's body. And if that's what you want to do, that's what you should do.
I want to say...
And Riker's at the bar. Like, Riker is at the bar looking at them having this conversation. He's trying to look longingly, but then he ends up like he's going to hurl. Like, he just has this look in his eye like something's going on. And yeah, he's witnessing it, and it happens.
But Tristan, when you had mentioned the booty call earlier, I was thinking about a little bit different one than Troy and Riker coming in together, because that's I kind of assume that that's going on, you know, throughout the series. But I think, you know, Dr. Crusher and Picard, boy, They had a little bit of sofa time together there too, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I was like, yeah, you know, who hasn't tried, hey, you know, I can't sleep very well. Maybe I can use your replicator. Maybe you can give me some nutmeg. Who hasn't tried that? I mean, that is right. In the 24th century booty call handbook.
And she didn't just come it to is. The room, I mean, like as herself. She was armed with the number one seal the deal instrument. Yep. Thank you, Tristan. Greg, we talked about this before. That ribbon does a lot for Gates's hairdo.
That ribbon, huh? Oh my goodness! And she didn't wear it. Like as it got weirder and weirder, she stopped putting it on, yeah. And I really missed it. But early on, wow! Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is because it's just this little pink ribbon that she has.
I also
don't
get it, but it works.
But you really love it, Greg, because our listeners can't see, but your on-screen nickname today is Greg Gates's Pink Ribbon Harbin.
Yeah, I don't know if people at home know that I always pick some sort of nickname to have for myself. I think last week was Spock Shaved Head, yes. Which is a little bit less attractive than Gates's Pink Ribbon.
What's really sad is how long it took me to realize what Pink Ribbon meant when you had that as your nickname. I honestly didn't know that that's what we were talking about. I'm a little embarrassed right now.
Tristan, you've been listening to too much Dork Trek also.
Yeah, for real.
You approach the show from a little different angle from me and Michael. The other thing I was going to mention is I don't know when she cuts her hair, but Ensign Ro cut her hair.
Really bad call. Mm-hmm.
It was a really bad call.
It's not a good look.
I think someone needs to go back in time, let Michelle Forbes know. The way she was rocking that hairdo before, you know, when she
that
was first on the show.
Sweet Scully
for first
do? Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was great. And now it's just this short crop thing, and
I think
it's not
she
working
just
for me.
She took the advice of Mott, and it just didn't work for her. Now she's got to let it, you know, grow back out. But so with this Crusher thing here, though, you know, we always wonder, like, when is Beverly going to hook up with Jean-Luc throughout the Next Generation? Mm-hmm. But, you know, apparently in this episode, I think that they hooked up 17 times because they were caught in this temporal causality loop for 17.4 days. And mm-hmm. I think it maybe not every time, but at least probably 2/3 of those loops, I think she visited Jean-Luc, and he played the old Aunt Adele's recipe card, yeah. which one of my yep. personal favorites. You know, I try it. It just doesn't work well for me, though. Like, if I'm in a bar, you know.
Well, there was no reason for her to go to his quarters for tea and croissants because she was already there.
Mm. There you go.
That's right.
Good points. Yes. Oh,
saves time.
Wow. Yeah. Right. I'm really going to have to start like keeping a chart of who slept with whom and when over the course of the show, because apparently this goes a lot deeper than I was aware.
I'll just give you mine. Don't worry.
Okay.
Tristan's been keeping one for years. It's very detailed.
Well, but speaking of Beverly, talk about her hair, talk about who she's sleeping with, but this is actually a really good Beverly episode, mm-hmm. which we don't really get those very often.
No, we don't.
That's very
no,
true.
I mean,
yeah, I have a
apart from Sub Rosa,
note.
There aren't a lot of good well, yeah. episodes, right?
I have a specific note on this. Like, you know, Beverly is our kind of barometer for the creepiness factor, right? Because she seems to be the one most mm-hmm. sensitive to this. So this is just who we've chosen to dwell on. And so, you know, throughout the episode, there's a lot to be uncovered as you watch it over and over and over again, as I'm sure we all know. But some of the push-ins and the close-ups on Gates McFadden are really, really effective at heightening that, you know, stuff's about mm-hmm. to go down factor, particularly in the yeah. conference room scenes when they've all, you know, and they get the call from the bridge, whether it's Worf or Ro, you know, it's unusual readings, 20,000 kilometers off. I mean, she is so wonderful at just looking vulnerable and frightened yeah. because yeah. it's stuff is about to happen that's not going to be great, obviously.
And I'm so glad they didn't go for the, oh, Guinan knows that something's yeah, different this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's always the card they play. But no,
or Deanna
they
feel it.
Oh, God, Deanna. Right.
Right. And, you know,
well, did yeah, you notice that, in here that Deanna could feel it, she says, we've got to get out of here now. Like,
yeah,
she somehow sensed the emotions of Frasier or something. I don't know.
Well, it's just, I love that she has become the person who states the obvious.
Oh,
like,
right.
Like, whenever there's a Ferengi and he's, like, yelling at Picard and they turn off the view screen, well, he's very angry.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And you notice how Picard just completely ignores her here.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got to get out of here now. And Picard just stares and he's like, eh, back us off like, nice and
can
slow.
You get the thrusters to working, Deanna?
Well,
thrusters.
They keep writing it, and she, I hope Surtees was really mad at this, but they keep having her say, "You don't have to be an empath to know that he's being very untrustworthy." Well, if you don't need to be an empath, Deanna, why are you going to the captain with this nugget of goodness that you're bringing him? Because apparently everything that you can tell him is blatantly obvious.
Yeah. And I mean, but you know what? She's got to justify her chair spot on the bridge, right?
That's true.
Well, yeah. It's like she has the tarot cards in front of her. Yeah. And
that would have been awesome if they had like a retractable table that she could like pull around when the ship gets in trouble and she gets the cards out.
And like
all of a sudden she has a Jamaican accent.
Yeah.
Yes.
No one knows why.
All right. Okay. Well, as we're getting closer to the ship exploding, can someone explain to me what exactly Data did? Like, how did he? What was this?
Oh,
why was this the thing he chose to do? The sending the three message.
We're going to defer to Mr. Science here, Tristan Riddell, who has assured us that the science is valid.
The well, science this is point, valid. Right?
I know a lot of you guys don't understand science. atoms, molecules. Sensitive warp bubbles and static warp shells and things like that. A Deccion field is, now if you notice that he, it's called a Deccion field, and he, you know, he worked on a deck of cards.
Ah.
Deccion field, deck of cards. And so the two just kind of went hand in hand. And so Geordi knew that, sent him a message, and he's like, okay, stack the deck because I just blasted you in the face with a Deccion field. And That's how science works, guys. It's all about alliteration.
I knew that too. I was aware of that. Okay.
Just ask Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he'll tell you the same thing.
All right. I feel like
I know you don't
Braga,
understand, Greg. Okay. I know it's
still,
over your head.
I'm gonna have to listen to the show. I'm gonna go with it for now. But I'll have to go back listen to the show again, maybe at like 0.5 speed and see if I can follow.
You know, I think the
okay, for right now, just trust me, because our listeners trust me right now.
The lesson to be learned is that no matter what you're manipulating, you know, as long as you've got the next generation armband prop with a lot of buttons on it, you can do special stuff, right?
Thank you, Michael. Thank you so much. I love that they were in Best of Both Worlds, and I love that they were in this episode.
Me too. I want to get one of those. That's my new thing. That's my new prop that I want to get now. Or build.
I'm telling you, Michael, if you wear that armband and you go down to the bar and you take your Aunt Adele pickup line, girls are going to be flocking to you.
It's the armband that makes it work. That's the problem, Chris.
I see.
Yeah. Okay. It's the arm. TNG's armband is like Voyager's cortical monitor.
Nice.
Like everyone had to wear one of those at some time,
right?
Because at any moment they were going to go into a coma or lose their lungs or something,
right?
Well, okay, but as I was, I believe, trying to say, Braga kind of wrote himself into a corner here, which I think kind of happens when you're Brandon Braga and you get to this point in the script. It doesn't make any sense, right? Can you guys back me up on this?
What specifically doesn't?
Yeah.
Well, he needed to send a word that would tell them what to do.
So it was a number,
why didn't he send the word... shuttle bay, you know,
or Riker.
Shuttle bay.
It's too many characters.
Or yeah, listen like, to Riker. I don't know. Like,
yeah, future Twitter has even lower bandwidth, Greg. Like, you can't get that many characters right in there, bro.
You can only send five letters.
Yeah, it's not even 140 characters. It's one number.
Right.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, I see.
The API on the Enterprise is very, it's really throttled.
Yes. Rudimentary.
Yeah. Yes. It's Chris just dropped an API joke.
Damn that Android app store.
Nice.
I don't know. So I thought sending the number three, I thought was very interesting. They have to work it into the poker game, though. So it really needed to be a number to work
true.
It into
that's
the
true.
Poker
game. Very true.
For me, the whole number three thing, it worked really well, and it was very interesting until the very end. I thought the idea that, well, it's the number of pips on Riker's uniform, I thought was kind of odd because, I mean, Data also has three pips on his uniform, mm-hmm. but one of them's black because he's a lieutenant commander.
Well, there you go. That's why it wouldn't have worked.
Right. So, that was
two and a half.
It's two and a half.
That's two and a half.
You got to do two and a half, right.
And he also, he didn't say pips. He said number of rank insignia.
rank insignia. Nah. Well, yeah. Well, that's even worse. He has three rank insignia on his collar.
That does affirm your point more. Now, I loved it, though. I absolutely loved it. And what I didn't get, though, like, I got the three pip thing, but what I didn't get was Riker had a complete opportunity to say, yeah, don't listen to the android next time. Listen to your XO.
That's very true.
I just saved 1,000 lives. Okay.
But that's a good question, though, seriously. Because, I mean, if you were Picard, which one would you have gone with, you know, not knowing?
Yeah.
I definitely would have gone with Data's suggestion. Like, Riker, you want to like blow out the shuttle bay and move the ship? No. Fire up the tractor beam, which apparently works when everything else is broken, by the way.
Right. Oh, I know.
We'll just go ahead and push the Bozeman aside. I totally would have gone with Data's suggestion. The Enterprise would not have survived under my command.
I really hope that Riker, in a private moment with Picard later, just really laid into him.
Yeah. You know. Well, he's a trombone player, and he also he knows how to talk to the ladies. He knows how to produce a lot of hot air. So blowing out the shuttle bays was right up his alley. So I would have listened to him.
It's probably, you know, they probably cut these scenes out, but throughout the rest of the series, every time one of these moments appears, Riker probably says to Picard, well, fine, yeah, listen to the android. Remember what happened last time you listened to the android? But, it became too repetitive, so they started cutting those out. He probably reminds Picard at every opportunity.
I would. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why Picard went with Data's suggestion. It's like, well, your XO...
Well, because
or
he's the
android.
Like,
I think it's because he's an android. Yeah, I mean, you assume that he can do the calculations very quickly and figure out which would be successful. So in Picard's position, I would probably go with Data as well.
Well, then Data was completely wrong. That's the other thing. It's like...
Yeah. 17 times.
It's not just that it doesn't really work. Times. It doesn't work at all. The ship, like, crashes into the nacelle. It's like... There's like this margin of error, and then there's crashing into the nacelle. It's like, well, he really screwed that one up, Data.
You would think that if they can memorize the order of the cards that are going to be dealt on the table after so many times through the loop, you would think one of them would remember that a ship hit the nacelle the last 16 times we tried this, right?
My roommate made the same exact
that
kind point
of thing would stick in your head.
Yeah. He was like, well, if they didn't have Data, they just needed to go through the loop about 35 more times.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. Like, they knew the card game backwards and forwards, but they didn't remember the whole fact that a ship came through a rift and blew it up. Like, I think that would stick in your mind.
Guys, but then you still the other don't thing. Get science.
Science. Okay.
I explained this. Deckion, deck of cards. Gosh.
Okay, here's the other thing. They were in this loop for... They were in this loop for 17 days, right? How long was the Bozeman in a loop?
90 years.
90 years. Frasier's crew couldn't solve this. In fact, it wasn't even... Frasier wasn't even like, oh, yeah, I sort of have been having deja vu. No, he's completely oblivious.
Completely unaware.
He has no idea that anything weird has been happening for 80 years.
Right, and this is the guy that you're going to go to when you need psychiatric help.
I know!
This is how you can't always upgrade from a sitcom to a full-hour drama. It just doesn't work that way.
It just doesn't
way.
Always translate, if you, right?
No, you're right.
A temporal,
you're right, Mike.
Temporal, what?
What?
You know,
I'm sorry, I was too busy admiring.
We're not even talking.
I'm sorry, I was too busy admiring how awesome my uniform is. I wasn't paying attention to the temporal causality.
We're not even talking about later Frasier either. This is Frasier when he still had the power of the beard as well, and he still can't figure it out.
That's very true.
That's nuts.
Oh, goodness. I am glad to see that they were using the Wrath of Khan uniforms all the way back in 2278.
Yeah.
They must have used that motion picture uniform for like 6 months, and then everyone came to their senses.
Yeah. Like, do I really need a life monitor belt?
Right.
Like, how is this going to help me?
Which was the coolest part of that whole uniform, right?
Yeah.
The lamest part was the coolest part.
Yeah, that's very true.
They're like, as if these uniforms weren't revealing enough already, let's put a giant life monitor belt around our waist and just squeeze that a little tighter.
Just right above the junk to draw your eye
right
into
it. You know, well, what they had, guys, was there was a whole lot of death footage of a lot of Starfleet personnel from V'ger blowing everybody up. And when everyone watched all that horrible, horrible footage, they were most disturbed by the footy pajamas that everyone was wearing. What's the problem?
Yeah, but so this story takes place about halfway between the motion picture and The Wrath of Khan. Well, not the story, mm-hmm. but the time period that the Bozeman is from is halfway between those two movies. So yeah, we do now know that they switched to the maroon jackets.
So it's Star Trek 1.5.
Than we thought. That's
so
right.
Here's my question. So, you know, Bozeman comes up again. You know, in Generations, they say the Bozeman had to change its, it had to do a course correction because of explosion of the sun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then in First Contact, it actually goes on that attack run with the Defiant on the Borg cube. Now, my question is, do you think that Captain Frazier's still wearing the Wrath of Khan uniform even when it's like 10 years later and they're fighting the Borg?
Yeah. Isn't there a novel about his character?
Oh, I'm really? Sure, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah,
like he reintegrates back into Starfleet and he gets like the Bozeman A. I may be off here. I'm not
sure.
Oh,
I'm sure you're absolutely correct, Tristan.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't know if it's a series based specifically on the Bozeman, but the Bozeman is mentioned heavily in at least a novel, yes.
Yeah, so it's the line. It sort of has Picard and Frazier next to each other. I think it's like a post-First Contact novel.
Okay.
And don't you know that Kelsey Grammer loves the fact that no matter what he's in, we will always refer to him as Frazier?
Yes. Okay. It does
not
matter.
Is he a Star Trek fan? Isn't Kelsey Grammer a Star Trek fan?
Oh, yeah. He's a huge Star Trek fan. And he really... He
pushed for this cameo?
Sort of like Whoopi Goldberg really asked if there was any way he could be in the show. And they figured it out because this is only... You know, he didn't have to come onto the set and do a bunch of stuff. It was really easy to do a walk-on role here.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I ever got famous, that would be the first chip that I'd throw in.
Absolutely.
Be like, put me in Star Trek.
Nice.
There is the episode of Frasier where he has to speak at the bar mitzvah or something, right? And they teach him the lines in Klingon. It is Frasier who goes up in and actually speaks
the
Klingon.
Yes, that is.
Yeah.
I remember
exactly
that episode. So, but the Bozeman in the First Contact era, that can't be the 23rd century Sousa class or whatever.
Yeah, it is.
It's the Bozeman.
Because it not only is it the Bozeman, but it is Kelsey Grammer's voice on the Starfleet frequency they're monitoring, because he came in and did some VO for that. So,
oh, no way. He really?
Oh, yeah.
So that's which I had the same reaction as you, Tristan. I was like, no, they just renamed a more modern vessel Bozeman, and that would make sense. No, apparently this antique vessel was fighting the Borg.
Well, it was at this point. I mean, it's not antique. It's still kind of brand new. I'm sure they retrofitted it. I mean, you don't want to just throw away a perfectly good starship.
But it is a bit like getting the USS Intrepid, you know, out into the New York Harbor to stave off an oncoming, you know, fleet. I understand it's still in original condition, but it's like,
Well, I mean, we just in the U.S. had the release of Battleship, where after all of the rest of the navies blown up, I did not see the film myself, but they pull a vintage battleship out of like a museum and use it to fight the aliens. So
it's not welded.
It's essentially
to the
same thing.
Is that the Wisconsin? You'll have to tell me about that after
I do not know.
Let's not ever talk about that movie again.
I decided I'm not gonna watch Battleship. I'm gonna wait until the Connect 4 movie comes out and then
Hungry Hippos.
So Greg just thinks that it's a refit. Bozeman refit, kind of like when the Enterprise came out in motion picture.
They probably put like a third nacelle on it and an extra laser cannon that's mounted on underneath the hull.
You mean made it badass and gave it a cloaking device?
Yeah. Nice. Yes.
Yes.
Oh man, we're really way off the rails here, aren't we? So I don't know what we're talking about anymore. So in preparing for this week's episode, I started... No, I need to get it.
Oh, man. Nikpa.
The show really did get to the point where every time Picard said, you know, we're headed into the Trevon Expanse, I was like, no! Stop it!
Yes.
Go away! In fact, stay away from any place, considering the rest of Star Trek, any place called something Expanse...
Yeah.
Probably just stay away. Don't even bother.
Yeah. Yeah. TNG, Voyager, Enterprise all had bad expanses.
Yeah. It's not good.
But along the lines of that Captain's Log repeatery, and Chris, you might be able to sympathize here. Like, I've watched so much of Next Generation throughout my life that I kind of randomly quote it throughout the day anyway for no good reason. But this episode especially, like, so many times in my life have I just been walking down the sidewalk and apropos of nothing said, I was lucky Ensign Fletcher was there to grab me. It's a long way down to the bottom of the warp core.
Oh, and that just adds even more opportunity to the 24th century booty call. Why do you think Geordi's knees were weak? Okay?
it's all that visor,
just throwing it out
that
there.
Visor pour in there.
Just throwing it out there. His V-chip malfunctioned. He got weak in the knees. He was going to make a fall.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I like it.
Yeah, did anybody else get a little sick of the repetitive lines and like started mouthing it with them like during the third or fourth time?
I personally like it. But what Michael's not revealing here, though, is another line he quotes is whenever, you know, back in his Fats Beard days, whenever he's in a bar and, you know, a little confrontation started, there was when he would say to his friends, "Back us off, nice and slow."
Nice and slow. He does look like he's like confronting a rabid dog in the neighborhood, doesn't he? Yeah. A couple times.
Right. He does get, but the way Stewart delivers the line, by the final one, he does sound kind of exasperated with the script.
Yeah.
If you watch his reaction, he's kind of like, he like straightens his jacket and he's like, "Back us off, nice and slow, whatever."
He's like, he brings that arm.
We have to do this
up
one more time. Yeah. It's like, please, please be right this time. Please be right.
I always quote the Shatner version. Back off, back off.
Oh, back off, back off. Yeah.
I think my favorite of the repeated lines from this is something that I'm going to try to incorporate into my daily speech. Still no help for the Klingon.
Yes.
Which I
yes.
think is just perfect. Anytime that you're doing something that's just going to piss someone off or they're just failing at life. Yep, still no help for the Klingon.
Your friend is failing at life. I need a shoulder to lean on. Still no help for the Klingon.
I love the mild irritation that we saw in Worf's face.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I never get any respect.
And this episode is perfect if you want to watch an episode of Worf getting told no a million times.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Oh, yes. Like,
it's like, maybe we should reverse course. Yeah.
And in that recurring science fiction trope that everyone always says, and you're like, no, because like, no, we're not going to second guess it. We'll just press on. It'll be great.
Yes, exactly.
You've seen the I have it on Trek FM on the site somewhere. Someone on YouTube put together, it's like 15, 16 minutes of clips of Worf everyone telling Worf no and ignoring Worf's suggestions.
There's even some DS9 in there, too.
Oh, wow.
No, I'm just like, Mike, the man can't get a break.
No. I mean, I understand when he's saying, you know, we should blow it up. Like, you know, like the USS Bozeman comes out, he's like, we should blow it up. Like, I understand when Picard says no there. But when it's like, maybe we should exercise caution and maybe not travel deeper into this hellhole.
No.
Maybe they could start listening to him at that
point. We're going to stay on this course.
Right. Or like when he said, maybe we should abort the child. Yeah, let's not listen to Worf then.
Right. Oh, that's a bad time to listen to Worf.
All right. Well, the reaction, one thing I did notice, again, I've seen this episode so many times. One thing I noticed last night watching this that I never really noticed before is the very, very first scene when Nurse Ogawa calls and says that LaForge has just come into sick bay. Did you notice Data's reaction?
No.
Data actually gives a look like it's familiar to him.
Oh, interesting.
No way, really?
And I never noticed it before because at that point in time, you're not watching for anything. You think it's just absolutely a normal thing.
Right.
I really think Data gives a little bit of kind of a cocks his head a little bit like something's unusual.
Or maybe he's just concerned for his best friend.
Maybe he is.
Maybe that's it.
You don't know.
There are a couple really cool things like we'll hear about a scene happening and then an iteration or two later, we'll actually see that scene.
Yes.
It wasn't all put together. Like he really did play with it as a puzzle. And there's things where you can tell he was like thinking about it in the shower where it's like, what are we going to do with Crusher's glass? Like every time I got to do something different with Crusher's glass.
Every time. Yeah. Hints.
I didn't know who you're talking about there. He's thinking about it in the shower. What are we going to do with Crusher?
it's true that all the layers are so skillfully like interwoven there. I and there's hints of Lost in that, I feel like, almost with this kind of like fate versus coincidence kind of thing of the that glass. She was determined not to break that thing,
and when
she did break it, when she thought she'd evaded it, and that look of kind of defeat on her face and fear was amazing.
Right.
Yeah. When she moved it across the room and she hit it with her jacket when she goes by. Yeah,
right.
It's great.
Yeah, I think the episode should have just ended with okay, they blow out the shuttle bay and it still doesn't work and they still blow up and it's just like the end.
Or like they blow out the shuttle
no
bay.
No more Next Generation.
They save
like
the ship.
There's nothing they can do.
And like, but Crusher like drops a glass and 10 forward and it's like, oh, damn right. It.
That could be good too.
I was glad that you guys brought up about the guys behind the scenes trying to think of new ways and to do things, because I read something on Memory Alpha, that a quote from Braga that I didn't understand what he was trying to get at, and so maybe you guys can explain it to me. Okay, so it says right here, the story was still missing some elements, and according to Braga, I came up with the poker game while I was eating pancakes and pouring syrup.
Oh, I know.
I had no idea how it happened. Because it was before the sugar rush.
Well, you know, you're trying to work on a complex, you know, like, you know, theoretical physics or, you know, rocket science, and you sit down and you pour the syrup all over the pancakes and you just stuff it all in your mouth, and then it hits you. The sugar,
okay.
The thoughts.
Okay.
Everything.
Okay.
And it just brings you to a new level of existence.
Right. Yes, exactly. Because maybe this can explain it, Tristan. In the notes for Threshold, there's that quote from Braga that says, I came up with the idea of the salamander babies after eating 3 stacks of pancakes and a whole bottle of maple syrup.
There you go.
There's a deleted scene from The Nth Degree where Barkley, every morning, keeps eating pancakes. And more and more pancakes and more and more and more pancakes.
There's yeah, a problem. And we just don't know why. And here's the rest of the quote, because here's what you'd think would explain what the hell pancakes have to do with it. But here it is. Okay. I knew that the poker game would somehow be utilized for once and lay it in so the viewer thinks just a poker game. And it turns out to be a key to saving their entire existence. That is a part of the same sentence belonging to the pancakes. So
you know, Tristan,
that's
have you ever looked at a poker game? I mean really, really looked at a poker game. Like, man, does anyone have some Doritos?
Yeah. I was gonna say.
Because what is a poker game unless just 52 stacks of pancakes?
Right.
I mean, that is really what a poker game is.
That's a good point.
That's that's one of a couple quotes I've seen recently in Memory Alpha. That didn't help explain anything.
So one of these editors it's just kind of going nuts.
Random thoughts, but I will agree with him there, though, that I love the fact that because they had used this poker game so often on the Next Generation, just as something the crew does, it did work perfectly here to completely throw you off that there's nothing unusual going on. And it's also cool that they were able to actually use it for something meaningful.
Yeah.
For once. Other than showing that Wesley is stupid, you know.
Right.
Other than that, you know.
You have a lot to learn about poker.
So many times the poker game is just an extra scene. They stuck at the beginning of the episode so that there could be something that they were doing. And so you assume when you leave the poker game, okay, we're never going back to that poker game. It was just a thing. But yeah, I love that it was really used so well and incorporated in the fabric of the episode.
Mm-hmm. It's a good thing they didn't have this poker game in the original series, because when the motion picture came around and they had to fill that script out to feature length, we would have had like, after it took them 20 minutes to get to the Enterprise, they would have had like a 40-minute poker game before they actually decided to go investigate V'ger.
And it would have been a holographic poker game.
Just imagine the camera panning around the cards and, you know, big arrays of lights lighting up the cards and the lens flares. And
while the Overture
the
was playing. Yes.
Flying in front.
Doing
and
little
doing
somersaults.
Little spins.
And yeah.
And just think of that puppy on Blu-ray.
I want to mention, though, that thanks to this episode, I really, really would like for Gates McFadden and Jonathan Frakes to have a fake humming competition.
Really?
Yes, because obviously we see it about 4 times in this episode where Gates is that kind of which she's trimming her flowers, right. But much, much, much better at it, I think. I don't know. You guys can tell me if I'm wrong. Is Jonathan Frakes when he's preparing those eggs for in the second season for the crew for Pulaski and everybody?
Right.
And he's like, jump, jump, da da. Like he's almost scatting, and it's much, much more compelling than Gates' kind of dreamy nonsense. And I guess it sucks because you can't hum anything that's copyrighted. So, and of course, right. They're not going to be, you know, what, it's 1991. They're not going to be, I don't know, Sheryl Crow? You guys tell me.
Humming Sheryl Crow.
Sheryl Crow. That's your go-to musical reference.
Hey, I just saw a Third Eye Blind concert this weekend, so I will brook no dissent from you, sir.
I'm sorry, I didn't know I needed to go into the Wayback Machine.
So Michael wants to have a hum off on the Enterprise, basically.
If while we different. Have them humming off, can we have Data doing some tap dancing as well?
Yes. Oh, Data should always tap dance in every single episode.
I think Gage should too. Okay, why is it that we're on a ship that houses 1,000 people? Okay, and we've had kids make references to arcades. They have giant arenas for shooting phasers and practicing. They even have sections for dolphins.
For dolphin tanks,
For dolphin tanks. But yet, whenever they have a play or an orchestra, it's done in something something smaller than 10 forward.
That's true. Well, the concert hall, yes. Space Third Eye Blind is always playing on the concert hall. And,
okay.
You know, there's always, you know, it's always packed full of people, and they can't book it.
That's a good point.
I gotcha.
They got to send people to the black box for Dr. Crusher's plays and Data's poetry reading.
It's like Wayne Newton really, in Las Vegas. He's never going to go away.
Exactly. I mean, if you had to choose between Space, Simon and Garfunkel, or Barkley doing Cyrano de Bergerac, like, which one are you going to book?
Barkley. Well, it depends on Cyrano. If he
it depends on if he's like he got the super intelligence or is just lame.
The one good episode or the rest of them.
Yeah, there you go. The one good episode or the rest of them. Like, he hit on me and it was good.
Wait, you say Dwight Schultz hit on you, Tristan, and it was good? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. When he's super intelligent, he knows how to push my buttons.
It's good. It's good that we're speaking truth. This is good.
I'm turned on by intelligence. So much is being revealed on this show.
Yeah, we're all getting to know each other.
But Tristan's buttons are on the giant wristband, though. All right. Well, we're almost at an hour here. I think we did talk about cause and effect. Some in here, although
somewhere in there, you can find
it. I do have to say, it is the very first time we've ever talked about Simon and Garfunkel on the Ready Room. But it was interesting anyway. So, how about final thoughts on cause and effect?
Let's see. The one thing I wanted to say that I didn't quite get a chance to say because I think we had a temporal causality loop while I was in the middle of it. They blew up an actual model of the Enterprise.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, yes, this was a bottle episode, and they were trying to save money, but they built it, and they dropped it, and they put explosives in it, and it was awesome.
Yes.
Like, it wasn't a reuse of, you know, movie footage. No. They actually went out and blew it up, and I think, I don't know, someone deserves a high five for putting it.
Yeah, they didn't use a bird of prey blowing up for the third time.
Exactly. Oh, man. Right. Yeah.
This is the stock footage we have. It's a bird of prey. I know it's the D, Enterprise D, but let's use Make this for the explosion. It'll work.
Well, you could have started out, you know, Captain's Log, Stardate 45652.1. The Enterprise is now a Klingon cruiser and has entered an area of space known as the Typhon Expanse.
Just that
right there, you've saved $500,000.
The HMS Bounty.
Right. That's right. No, that's
and the
a good
food
point.
Packs yeah, are yeah. making Worf's stomach sour.
It is a good point. No, it's always great to see it when practical effects are done, you know, well. And this isn't the best that TNG can do with it, but I agree. I really enjoyed seeing the Enterprise blow up in physical form instead of a superimposed gasoline explosion on top, you know, crossfaded, you know, on top of the studio.
Yeah, it's
model.
Like they have like some kind of exchange agreement with MacGyver.
MacGyver's like, yeah, they've got to get like 5 stock explosions per season from MacGyver that they can just use to superimpose.
Yeah, I definitely miss models. I mean, TNG, if TNG just knew how to do it, and that it just gave it, you know, post season 3, they gave a sense of realism to it that you just don't get with CGI, at least not yet in TV. Yeah. I mean, Enterprise didn't even come close. I mean, they did good with what they had, but just the realism that you have with the models, it just can't be touched yet.
Yeah, especially once you watch the Blu-ray. Once you watch the Blu-ray and you see, like... And actually, watching the Blu-rays give me a new appreciation for some of these model shots, like I see the where it says Enterprise now. Actually see that that's there. I start noticing some of those details. Whereas before, I don't think I was paying as close of attention. But now that I realize how amazing it is, I'm drawn into those space shots even more.
That's what I was going to say was in the Blu-rays, I think like this episode is going to be an example too, where we see, like Michael, you're saying that realism, when we see it in high definition, it's going to be more amazing than what we saw later on, late DS9 into Voyager, when they really did start doing everything as CGI.
And to the people who are listening, with the TNG Blu-ray restoration, that is what it is. It's a restoration. They're not they're not going back and redoing digital effects like they did with the TOS remaster. This is just showing what the original production designers did and made. Like, this is just showing us how much detail they put into it. And so like we're just seeing their true vision as much as possible now. There's no one's going in and replacing it with CGI or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people still think that for some reason.
Yeah, I guess there are a few people that still think that. So, but if you just watch the sampler and then in July you'll get the whole first season and we'll see what they're doing for sure. I mean, if they were going to redo anything, they would definitely change Troy's hair, and they're not. So we pretty much know that
old
that's
bun head.
And I know that Jones would put more Leffler in there. So
I would. She would be in every episode. Right. All right. So I think we agree this is an excellent episode of The Next Generation. It is by far one of my favorites. Just the concept. I love time travel stories to start with. So the whole concept of this time loop I find very interesting. I love the fact that here Picard keeps making the same decision to stay on course and go through this Typhon expanse because he doesn't realize he's done it before. It's very different than what we would get in Voyager, where Janeway would go into the expanse, something would happen, they would have to retreat to repair the ship, and then they would come and she would do the same thing 17 times in a row because she thinks that space is two-dimensional and she cannot go around the expanse or anything.
And she would win.
And she would win.
Right, yeah. Somehow.
Yeah.
In the end.
She would punch through it.
Oh, that's right.
The power of black coffee. But this is a great concept for me. I love the take on time travel. I love that the episode is mostly quiet throughout. And they kind of figure things out as they go, which for me is very much what TNG was about, was figuring things out. So, great episode.
Definitely, yeah.
Agreed. Absolutely.
My final thing, though, because I do focus on the minutiae, is that some of Brandon Braga's dialogue really hits my ear nicely, and I've adapted a lot of his bad habits, like making sentences like, eliminate all non-vocal waveform components, to say, I just want to hear the voices. And when Geordi talks about Googling the number 3 by running a pattern matching algorithm on it, I would just like to publicly acknowledge that this is the dialogue that I grew up with. And therefore, when I write, I follow all of these awful, awful habits, like I'm getting paid by the word. And, you know, thank you, Brandon Braga, for that.
Lasting impact. From cause and effect. All right. Well, that wraps up our discussion of cause and effect and many other topics that were maybe not really related to cause and effect. But personally, I had a blast talking about this. It was a very fun discussion. So Michael and Tristan, thanks so much for joining us today. And before we go, Tristan, tell everyone where they can find you.
Oh, yes. It was great to be here and love talking to you guys. And if you guys want to talk to me, I love talking to Star Trek fans. So you can find me at Twitter at The Insane Robin.
All right. And of course, everyone can see you every week on Hyper Channel.
Absolutely.
With your dulcet tones and spiky hair.
Oh, well, thank you. Dulcet tones and spiky hairs are kind of my trademark. Working on that right now, trying to get it trademarked and copyrighted. But yes, please tune in every Thursday for Hyper Channel at trek.fm.
All right. And Michael, tell everyone where they can find you.
Well, I, as a fellow spiky-haired, dulcet-toned individual, I feel in good company. It was great to share the airwaves with you, Tristan, Greg, and Chris, as usual. Mm. As well, I am at Fats Rikerbeard on Twitter. If you want to follow me for more technically-minded, mobile phone-oriented gadgetry stuff, I have another Twitter account. It is at Captain, the number 2, phones, P-H-O-N-E-S. And it was great to be here. Thank you very much, guys.
Well, as always, it was great to have Michael and Tristan with us. We always have loads of fun when we have Michael on and loads of fun when we have Tristan on. And having them both together on what is probably one of my favorite Next Gen episodes, now that I've gone back and rewatched it, this was really great. I had a ton of fun today.
Oh, me too. I think we stay relatively focused on the Ready Room usually, but we did go off the rails a few times today because when the four of us get together, you never quite know what direction the conversation's going to go in. So it was definitely a fun one. But yeah, Cause and Effect is such a great episode. So I'm glad we finally got around to that one. So Greg, let's tell everyone where they can find us if they want to send us a note. Tell us what they think about Cause and Effect or what they think about today's show, anything we talked about. You can just go to trek.fm/contact and send us a text message there. Of course, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, on Google Plus at hyperchannel/trekfmgplus, and you'll find us on Twitter at username trekfm. And Greg, you're still tweeting these days, I believe. Now, what's your special thing this week that you're tweeting about?
Well, if you've been following me over the weekend, a lot of pictures of glasses that used to be full of gin. So if you like hearing about people drinking or random song lyrics that don't make any sense unless you've been talking to me pretty consistently over the last 3 months, then follow me at Greg Harbin. That's GREGHARB, IN, I believe. And yeah, I really mostly enjoy on there talking to people. You know, at reply me, I'll write you back. Most of my conversation, my talking about Star Trek is in at replies. I do try, though. I've been a little bit today marathoning, actually for the past couple weeks, marathoning TNG. So when I'm not iMessaging Chris with my comments, I'm probably putting it up on my Twitter.
That's right. Yeah. So, Greg, I think that the effects of the gin have not completely worn off yet there, as you almost forgot how to spell your own name. But
I know. Well, believe me, at about 1:30 a.m. last night, I did. I not only forgot how to spell it, I forgot what it was. So I'm doing much better at this point.
All right. That reminds me, maybe for next time on our TNG show, we should do Conundrum.
Ooh, that's a good one.
You never know. I mean, you might even get to hook up with Ro. So, pre-haircut Ro, I believe it is.
Is it pre-haircut? Good. Okay.
I think. Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
That's important.
Of course, you know, Riker. He hooked up, but we kind of expect that anyway. Anyway, all right. Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And like Greg, if you at reply me, I will reply to you. And I still don't tweet all that much these days about just like anything that's happening. But I will definitely talk to you. That's my primary use for Twitter as well, at replying, having conversations. So if you follow me, shoot me a note. Let me know you're there. And I'd love to hear from you. And also, I would like to remind everyone, if you do enjoy The Ready Room, please stop by iTunes and leave us a rating and leave us a review. We do love hearing from you, hearing your thoughts about the show, and it does help other listeners find the show as well when they search for Star Trek. So please do that if you'd like. And I guess that's about wraps up everything for this week, Greg. So I'm going to go off. I've got a couple of plants I need to go trim.
All right, Chris. Well, as I mentioned to you off air, this is my birthday episode, releasing on my birthday this week, so I think I'm going to go stick some candles in it, because the Ready Room is done.